So we will continue. Are there any questions from this morning? I'll sing the Mangala Charan, then we can start.
Om Ajnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshuranmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamaiham Dadati Swapadantikam Ajnana Niradirupatiyaya Vishesham Bhakti Parapi Bhajate Pariposham Uchayi Tatvam Param Spurati Duragamamapyajasram Sarkunyabhit Svarachitam Pranamami Gita Vyavahita Prithana Mukham Niriksha Svachanamadhavimukhasya dosha buddhya Kumati maharadatma vijjaya yash Charanarati paramasya tasya mustu Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Panchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah.
I offer my respectful obeisances to the Gita, which was spoken by the Lord who is endowed with perfect qualities. It is a work by which the ocean of ignorance meets its complete end, by which pure bhakti becomes fully nourished to the highest degree, and by which the supreme truth, normally difficult to understand, becomes eternally manifest. So any questions from this morning? If you cannot take to this practice, according to Prabhupada and according to the Acharyas, it doesn't refer to 11. No. Because it says abhyasa. And the abhyasa, it came in verse 9. Abhyasa yogena tato. That's where it came. So this is my notes here say that it refers to verse 10 or 9 or both. Because usually, it refers to 9 or 10. Abhyas was mentioned in 9. Means if you cannot engage in devotional service, this is how Prabhupada, what does he say? He says, for those who are not in the purport, he says, as mentioned in the previous verses, there are two kinds of devotional service. The way of regulative principles and the way of full attachment in love to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this refers to the direct path which was described in 8, 9 and 10. And he says, for those who are actually not able to follow the principles of Krishna consciousness, it is better to cultivate knowledge and so on. Okay? So it doesn't refer to 11. 8, 9 and 10. Prabhupada says, he mentions two. The regulative principles and full attachment in love. So full attachment in love was 8. Regulative principles was 9. As well as 10. It's 9 and 10, the regulative principle. But in 9, it's more with full consciousness, trying to fix the mind on Krishna. And 10 is more like just, you know, working for Krishna without much consciousness attached, Krishna consciousness attached. The commentators, they also attach it to 9 because of abhyas. The word abhyas is there. We have a guest, Hare Krishna. Welcome. What's your name? Dinabandhu Das, very famous name. Okay, anything else of these verses? As I was reading the next section, I also had maybe a little insight on that verse 12, which is really difficult to understand the way Krishna has put that. But one clue I got from one of the purports is that we also studied when we were doing the Yoga Ladha, that what Krishna, especially regarding the Ashtanga Yoga practices, we saw that Krishna did not encourage that one gives up the karma altogether, but you start practicing meditation and you continue to work. So in that sense you could also take it that he's doing this even if you go for dhyan. When you practice at the level of dhyan and dhyan, still some work will be involved. And you should surely continue to give up the fruit.
Yeah, I mean, this chapter of Krishna says that if you encourage the work to do, you will not encourage the demons in the world.
Yes.
The starting of the Arjuna asks. So yeah. All these steps come under the work to do. But the meditation and the cultivating knowledge was still come under the demons in the world. Demons in the world, that is not written in the meditation.
That is not recommended,
so
never.
Once again, turning back into the work only.
Yes. This is very typical. It follows, this presentation actually exactly follows what Krishna has been explaining. Yeah. He always encourages the path of work. Don't give up work. You know, continue to work, develop the consciousness. He never encourages the path of dry renunciation.
Yeah, even the total.
Never. Yes. Never encourage that. Yes. Yeah, because it is unnatural. And as we saw, it's so indirect. Once you get into this meditation and the development of impersonalistic knowledge, it will be very difficult to again become a devotee at that time. I can give a small realization from my side that I don't know what I was doing in my past life, but I know that when I came to Krishna consciousness, I was really having a hard time with the work part. I couldn't understand how this is spiritual. You know, I understood the japa. I was very happy with chanting japa. I was very happy with studying. I was very happy with kirtan. I was very happy. Even the deity worship, that was fine. But all this work, doing so many things and using so many things, the yukta viragya aspect, took me several years to understand how when you work for Krishna, it's not material. So there's definitely there is some sanskaras which are carried over, you know, which make bhakti difficult.
So how does one transform from external to internal?
through hearing, and it's not just hearing, but hearing is the main medium, because through hearing, impressions are coming directly on the mind, which will reflect, and so the mind will start thinking more about Krishna, and it takes the purification of the mind, purification of the senses, purification of the mind, and association. If you have never associated with anybody who cultivates Krishna consciousness internally, you won't even know that it exists. But again, it comes by hearing. Like when you study the nectar of instruction, if you study it, you know, it takes you from the very beginning of engaging the senses in Krishna consciousness, and it takes you all the way to Raganuga Bhakti and meditating on, you know, it takes you all the way there. So this is our line, actually. This internal cultivation of Krishna consciousness, it is what our movement is about. But it has to be understood, and it's by association and by hearing. Especially hearing the Bhakti Shastras, not hearing the Upanishads, because they don't talk about those things. You have to hear the Bhakti Shastras. You hear the Bhagavatam and the works of the Goswamis, then this will happen.
If you compare hearing to reading, can you elaborate more on that? Supposing you have, like, say, a few hours every day when you go back. So, as compared to hearing and reading, is there any difference? Is hearing better than reading?
Hearing is superior to reading, but whether you read or hear, it should be done with concentration. See, there is a tendency that when you read, you'll at least try to be concentrated. You will only read. You can't read and type an email message. You can't read and do something else. You have to read only. But many times we see that sometimes devotees, they hear while driving, they hear while cleaning, they hear while doing this, while doing that. So if you want to get a good result from the hearing, you should sit. Like here, you come in class, you sit, you hear, you do only that. So that's very good. So if you want to hear, you should hear only. I don't mean that you should not hear when you are doing other things, but at that time your hearing is superficial. Hearing should be done with respect. It should be done with attention, concentration.
Because I constantly felt that when I'm hearing, my concentration is better than when I'm reading. I wanted to be sure that, supposing I have 3 hours every day, I can either read or I can hear. So that's what I wanted to be sure.
Hearing and reading are the same. But hearing is the original, natural way of learning. Reading is something which has evolved over time. As we hear, Vyasadeva wrote down the scriptures. Before that, you know, that's one explanation Prabhupada gave why the modern scientists, they think that before men were primitives, because there is no trace of anything written down, you know. But the point is that it's not this, is that they did not need to write. They were not writing because their intelligence was superior and they were much less materialistic than we are. They were not like multiplying all the material facilities and having all this infrastructure. It was just jungle and beautiful places, natural places. They would travel by walk, they would eat what grew on the trees or what somehow they, you know, even agriculture, it starts, you know, in Satya Yoga there's no agriculture, there are no varnas, so there's no agriculture, they just eat the fruit and the roots and the leaves, they drink the water, mango juice. So this reading is something which has evolved for the modern man. It is even in modern education, it is considered that reading gives you the least, retention. The least retention. I don't remember the percentages, like 7 or 10% something. When you read, you hardly remember anything. Because when we read, the eyes are involved and the mind is involved, but there is a tendency that sometimes it's like when chanting japa. When you chant japa, sometimes you realize your mind is somewhere else and you don't know when the mind had gone there. Similarly, when you read, sometimes you feel like, oh, I finished the page, what was in there? The mind was not in the reading. Familiar. Yeah. But when you hear, you're more forced to be attentive. Yeah. There is only one sense mostly which is working, is the ears. And these are the doors for getting knowledge, not the eyes. The eyes is pratyaksha. The eyes is not meant for getting knowledge. But the ears are meant to get the knowledge. So I forgot what your question was, but about hearing and reading. So hear with attention. Hearing is very good. And it depends on the people. Some people cannot hear. But if you can, then you are fortunate. And you must all understand this after having come to the Bhakti Shastri, that we all heard the Bhagavad Gita and other books before. And we tried to understand and we read and everything. But when we hear, it's different. Is it or not?
Yes.
It's different. When you hear, it is different. It goes inside in a different way. It reaches the heart directly. From the hear, it goes straight into the mind, straight into the heart. And there it works. The sound enters. And it's transcendental sound, it's purifying. And we saw also there are many other factors which are involved. We discussed that one time, I told you about this, like people think they can get knowledge from a book on their own, which with Prabhupada's books, it has some great amount of truth, because the books are non-different from Krishna, they are non-different from Prabhupada. But the process to get knowledge, especially this spiritual knowledge, is to hear. And is to hear from someone. And to hear from someone is not easy. You have to forgive many things. It's not easy to hear from somebody. Yeah, it's some humility is required. Most people cannot, you know, they don't want to hear from someone else because somehow in their mind it implies so many things that they cannot adjust with. So usually it's difficult to go and hear. And how we should hear has also been given submissively. That's the difficult part. We are not ready for that. And then you deal with the person. It's person to person. You deal with the person. And yeah, there may be some things you like about the person and there may be some things you don't like. It's very difficult to hear from someone. But that's the Vedic process. And I must say that, I don't know, for myself, I've experimented in my life that this hearing process is just very transforming. It's very, very transforming.
When we are back to our basic, then we can hear by electronic media, right?
Yeah.
That's also okay.
Yes.
Obviously, live we get once in a week or something.
Yeah, this is our good fortune in Kali Yoga. We can hear. Sankirtan is everything. And iPod. Next to Sankirtan is iPod. Very good. Yes, it's good. All right, so we'll go over the next section here. 13 to 20 qualities that endear one to Krishna. So, this section particularly acclaims, praises the supremacy of bhakti. In this verse, in these verses, Krishna describes the qualities of a bhakti yogi. And that if one has such qualities, then that person becomes dear to Krishna. And he doesn't say that one time. He says that in almost each and every verse. I don't remember how many times he says that. At least seven times he said that one who has such and such qualities is very dear to me. So what this means also is that this section stresses that bhakti is about developing a loving relationship with Krishna, and it shows how the devotee conquers the Lord. This is what this section is explaining. This is actually the last section of this presentation on bhakti yoga. So it is, we can say this is the topmost that Krishna has to say. And this is what he says, that I become conquered by my devotee. And not only we love Krishna, but he begins loving us. We become dear to him. So this is a very unprecedented praise. As we said before, in chapter 2, we had heard of the qualities of the sthita pragya, someone who becomes fixed in knowledge through the practice of nishkam karma yoga. But at that time, Krishna didn't say anything like this. Oh, he is very dear to me. He didn't say anything like this. He just said, yeah, he's like this, he's like that. And then in chapter 6, we heard of the qualities of the Ashtanga yogi. And again at that time, we read, I remember some purport by Srila Prabhupada where he said that Krishna never says, I am Jnani Vatsala or Yogi Vatsala. No, I am Bhakta Vatsala. He is known as Bhakta Vatsala. He loves his devotees. He doesn't have the same affection for the yogis and the jnanis and the karmis. It's not that he doesn't love them, but the relationship is more distant. Here we are talking of a very intimate, personal, close relationship with Krishna. This section also gives us our goal of life. What is our goal of life? To become dear to Krishna. This is our goal of life. We should become dear to Krishna. This is our only goal of life. In whatever we do, we are not here to achieve something. We'll see. He will say that. All these things he will say. My devotees, they are not here to achieve something. And they are just here to please me. And therefore they become dear. Now many of these qualities are going to be repeated again and again or its qualities that we already heard in the other descriptions, but this time they are possessed by the devotee. Yeah? And when it's taken all together and the devotion is there, then Krishna is very pleased with it. So we'll read through this. Sometimes they indicate qualities. The words will indicate qualities. Sometimes Krishna will talk of the behavior. So there will be the qualities and attitudes and the behavior that pleases Krishna. So verses 13 to 14. Advaishta sarvabhutanam maitra karuna evacha nirmamo nirahankara samadukha sukhakshami santushta satatam yogi yatatma dhrida nishchayaha mayyarpita mano buddhir yomad bhakta same priya. One who is not envious, but is a kind friend to all living entities, who does not think himself a proprietor and is free from false ego, who is equal in both happiness and distress, who is tolerant, always satisfied, self-controlled, and engaged in devotional service with determination, his mind and intelligence fixed on me. Such a devotee of mine is very dear to me. Prabhupada explains, coming again to the point of pure devotional service, the Lord is describing the transcendental qualifications of a pure devotee in these two verses. So it's not exactly only these two verses. In the other verses, he adds on more and more and more. But this is particularly... So these are the qualities of those who are Ananya Bhaktas, who worship the Lord with all their heart. So any comments on these qualities here? One thing it says here is that Srila Prabhupada took it to mean that all these qualities, there is something, in the second verse, the third line says, Mayar Pitamano Buddhir, which means that his mind and intelligence are fixed on me. So this was the quality actually that we just studied in number 8. The person who is the most elevated, who is a pure devotee, his mind and intelligence are fixed in Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada says that this is the result actually of all these qualities, because the devotee has all these qualities, Krishna is pleased with him, and he is able to fix his mind. He says all these qualifications enable the devotee to fix his mind and intelligence entirely on the Supreme Lord. So this is the topmost stage of devotion. He is defining here a pure devotee. And Srila Prabhupada explains, such a standard of devotional service is undoubtedly very rare, but a devotee becomes situated in that stage by following the regulative principles of devotional service. So by practicing devotional service, these qualities develop. And as these qualities develop, then we'll be able to actually have our mind fixed on Krishna in meditation upon Him, in complete absorption in Him, leading to samadhi, being completely united with Krishna in a transcendental relationship. So let us see how some of these qualities are. Prabhupada has made different comments about these qualities. What did he say about being non-envious? Why is he non-envious? Because? Because he sees Krishna everywhere? Yeah. Yeah, it could be. Something else? Doesn't have any envy for Krishna, so he doesn't have envy for his parts and parcels either. Okay? Where does envy come from? Envy means what? Somebody's got something I don't have, and therefore. Yeah, you don't like that person because he has something that you don't have. You wish he wouldn't have it because you should be the one who should have it. Yes. And this is born from what? From what? Impure heart, yes. Impure heart, which is covered by ignorance. Which ignorance is that? That you don't understand. Prabhupada explains in the purport that you don't understand that everyone has been given his quota by Krishna. Everyone receives his things, you know, according to Krishna's plan. So we should understand that everything is a product of whatever we have done in the past. Someone gets this, someone gets that, and we should respect that. So the devotee, because he respects Krishna, so he respects Krishna's choice, that Krishna has given a beautiful Mercedes car to somebody, and to me he has given a bicycle. I'm happy. It's his choice. I like Krishna's choice because I understand. I love him. So therefore I don't take it badly. Prabhupada also explains that non-envious, many times Srila Prabhupada says that in envy there is enmity. So someone who is non-envious, a devotee, he also doesn't see anyone as his enemy. He's not my enemy. He understands, even if someone beats me on the head, then what will the devotee think? Yeah, it's the result of my past misdeeds. I must have misbehaved in the past, and so I received this on my head. Okay, I accept it. Krishna allowed it. And I love Krishna. I know everything he does is perfect. That's the vision of the devotee. Because of the connection with Krishna, then I accept whatever happens in my life. Prabhupada says, thanks to my past misdeeds, I should suffer far, far greater than I'm suffering now. That's the vision of the devotee. He always sees Krishna's mercy. So he doesn't see that I've got less, this one has got more. Everything is just perfect. And this is connected with the next quality, which is Maitra. He's friendly. He's friendly to all living entities. He's always calm, quiet, patient, kind to even his enemy. So once that envy is not there, then we can extend our affection to others. If we are envious, then we don't feel like giving. We don't feel like facilitating. We should always understand, even if someone misbehaves with us, we should know that why does he misbehave? It's because, you know, that person must be somewhere or the other obscured by ignorance. Otherwise, why should he misbehave? A person who is enlightened doesn't misbehave with others, doesn't give trouble to others. So if somebody misbehaves with me, I must understand that person must be somehow covered by ignorance. So as a good friend to all living entity, I won't feel like retaliating, because on the ignorant one should have mercy. So these are the very elevated qualities of the devotee. But we can hardly relate to it, because as soon as somebody shows a little something with us, immediately we are ready to bite. And why did you say this about me? And what did you do that? What did you do that? We are just ready. So actually this section should make us little humble, because we don't have those qualities awfully evolved in our heart. We easily get angry, we easily wonder, oh, why did he get this? Oh, why did he get that? Oh, what about me? The most important person in the world. Who is that?
Me.
I am the navel of the universal form. Everything revolves around me. What about kindness? Well, let him do it himself. Help yourself. God helps those who help themselves. What is the need of all this kindness? As we said, it's your karma. But a devotee is kind, very kind. Srila Prabhupada's disciples, they report this about Srila Prabhupada. Now he was very kind. Today they were speaking of that. Yeah, very, very kind. And not only in the beginning of the movement, always. Prabhupada was concerned, do you have enough clothes in the winter? He would ask the devotees, do you have enough clothes? Do you have enough blankets? Do you have this? Do you have that? He was always concerned. He was very kind. When he would travel, he would always ask, so where is everybody staying? Because he would have always a good room. They would give him a room, but Prabhupada was concerned. Where are the devotees staying? Where are you all staying? Did you eat? So, very kind. Does not think himself a proprietor. This is called nirmama. Nirmama. Regarding Maitra, Srila Prabhupada says that he does not want to kill even an ant or a mosquito. Even the mosquito, imagine. So this is the level of the great devotee. He doesn't want to interfere with anybody's relationship. The way he sees it is that everyone has a relationship with Krishna, so he doesn't want to interfere with anything. So he's very kind. Srila Prabhupada says that someone who is kind, who has karuna, he will preach all over the world. That's Prabhupada's vision of kindness. Kindness doesn't just mean, as I said, do you have your two blankets and do you have a chadar? That's one kind of kindness which Prabhupada had. He was very human. He had that kindness. But the greatest kindness is to actually save people from this material existence. That is the real ahimsa. That is the greatest kindness. So that's Prabhupada says. A Krishna conscious person will preach Krishna consciousness all over the world as far as possible. That is called karuna. Then nirmama. What is nirmama?
Nothing is mine.
Therefore I don't care for it. No, nirmama means the sense of proprietorship is not there, because the devotee knows it's Krishna's. Prabhupada explains that Srila Prabhupada says regarding that actually the devotee doesn't see anything as his because he's not identified with the body. That's how his non-possessiveness comes. Therefore, you know, he knows very well that he's not the material body. In his lectures, Srila Prabhupada says, Nirmama also means not practicing nepotism. You know what is nepotism? Favoritism. You favor what is your own. Yeah. We know that in politics, in any field, if there is somebody one favors one's family members, one favors, you know, people who are of the same, some group, some kind of same somewhere. So you favor them. So that nepotism, that is not, a devotee is not like this. He has a big umbrella. He knows who is the top person, Krishna. So everyone is on the same level. Everyone is of the same family. And he doesn't see small groups here and there. That is not part of a great devotee's kind of psychology. He doesn't think like that. So, in this way we can understand also that Prabhupada preached all over the world. He didn't think that this knowledge is only for India. He went everywhere and distributed because he was not identified with his body. So there was no Nirmama. Then Prabhupada says, Nirahankara, so without false ego. He thinks only that he is a servant of Krishna. Then he says he is very tolerant. He sees what is tolerant. He is equal in happiness and distress. Let's try. He is very forgiving, self-controlled. So all these things are there. What Srila Prabhupada says, in terms of kshami, one who is very tolerant. Srila Prabhupada gives the example of Lord Jesus, who was an extreme. This was one of the main features of his preaching. He was preaching forgiveness, always. And because, I think we discussed that before, because to forgive, you need so many other qualities behind. You need the tolerance, you need the determination, you need the patience, you need so many things in order to be able to forgive. You need the knowledge, you need the detachment. So if you preach forgiveness, then, you know, people who become forgiving, they are endowed with many other qualities. So Prabhupada says, we have the example of the life of Lord Jesus Christ. When he was being killed by others, he asked the Lord to please excuse them. And you know in what position he was? It was on the crucifix. They actually dragged him through the streets. They made him carry a cross, which was made with solid wood. It was very heavy, a very big cross. They made him carry that all the way up a hill in the summer without giving him water after having beaten him up for a long time. And then when he arrived on the top there, what they did, they actually laid him down on the cross. And there's a cross like this, you know, that symbol. And they put nails big like this in his hands. They put nails in his hands. One hand. Imagine a nail in the hand like this. And then the second hand. And then the feet. They put his 2 feet on top of each other like this. And then they nailed. The carpenter. Nailed. A huge nail in his feet, breaking the bone and everything. What a pain. You know? And then after that, they raised the cross. So he was hanging. Imagine, from his hands, he was hanging. And in order for the hands not to, I don't know, break or whatever, he had to somehow press on his feet or something. So he was hanging like that. And on his head, they put a crown of thorns. They pressed it in their head and the thorns entered his head and the blood was flowing all over his face. And in that position of extreme physical suffering, and it was not only physical suffering, it's like he had been preaching in that land and somehow or other, you know, he ended up on the cross. So what did he say in that terrible situation? Oh my Lord, please forgive them. Because he knew who he was and what kind of reactions they were going to get for doing that. They were all going to hell. But he thought about them. No, they should not go to hell. So he prayed, oh my Lord, please forgive them. For they do not know what they are doing. This is very extreme. So if we could imbibe just a little bit of this spirit, you know, not just get excited as soon as somebody, you know, doesn't open the door for us or stands in the way a little bit too long or takes the lamp before we take the lamp. You know, people always... somebody gives us the lamp and three other people come and take the lamp and we're going, hot. So this is not the mood of a devotee. Very tolerant. Prabhupada says, always satisfied. Prabhupada says, he's always satisfied. In any condition of life, this is very difficult. Thinking, my pains and pleasures are now dependent on the will of Krishna. If Krishna desires that I should suffer like this, why should I bother? To accept, it's very difficult to accept the condition we are in. I was born like this. Okay, that's fine. When I was a child, this happened to me. That's okay. Then I grew up and that happened to me. That's okay. You know. And now I'm in this situation. That's all right. I'm satisfied. So how can one be satisfied in the midst of terrible, sometimes external situations? Only when the consciousness is fixed on Krishna. When our goal of life is to become dear to Krishna, not to rebel. Why did you do this to me? Why did you do this to me? No. Very difficult. He is satisfied with whatever comes by the grace of the Supreme Lord. Does not endeavor much to achieve something with great difficulty. Therefore, he's always joyful. So take life as it comes. Easy. Because our purpose in this lifetime is not to try to get more than what we got. It's not to be dissatisfied. Why didn't I get this? Why didn't I get that? What would you do once you get it? We know from the Shastra that no matter how much we get, we will always want more. There will always be another one who has more. Something else, something new. So the devotee is fixed. What should increase? It's my bhakti. That should increase. Who cares how much I've eaten today, where I have slept, who gave me a slap, who gave me a praise? Who cares for these things? This is not what is going to help me at the time of death. What is going to help me at the time of death is how much I remember Krishna. how much I've heard about Krishna, that will help me. Prabhupada says also, sense control. Because his senses are controlled, he's determined, and not he's not swayed by false arguments, because no one can lead him from the fixed determination of devotional service. So these are some of the qualities that are mentioned here. There is also, what is it, Drida Vishvai, Drida Nishchai. Drida Nishchai, Srila Prabhupada explains. Drida Nishchai means he believes in the words of Krishna. So what does it mean we believe in the words of Krishna? It means we do what he says. So that is the devotee. Krishna says, Sarva Dharman Parityaja, Mamekam Sharanam Braja. A devotee believes, I have nothing to do except to surrender to Krishna. Then all my business is done. So we have to act upon Krishna's words. Then that is called, that means that we have actually firm faith in them. Because when we do not act upon what we hear, it means there's a doubt somewhere. And the doubt means there's some attachment somewhere. Some attachment, some doubt is there. So Krishna said, do this, but what about this, what about that, what about this, what about that? So it means there is some nischay, but it is not dhridha nischay. It is not firm. So we have to work towards that. As Prabhupada said, by practice. So verse 15. Yasman no dvijate loko, loka no dvijate chayaha. Harsha marsha bhayodvaige muktoya satchame priyaha. He for whom no one is put into difficulty, and who is not disturbed by anyone, who is equipoised in happiness and distress, fear and anxiety, is very dear to me. So one thing is not to be disturbed when somebody gives us trouble. And another is not to trouble anyone. That's very difficult. Usually we are expert at rather giving trouble to others in different ways. And why is that? It's very unfortunate, but it's because we are self-centered. So we put always ourselves first, right? So this is an unfortunate disease that we have. When I read this, I feel particularly culprit that we give trouble to others. So I know for myself, I give trouble to others. But we can meditate on this. How do we give trouble to others? How do we give trouble to others? We are inconsiderate, so we cause them anxiety unnecessarily. Yes? Sometimes unintentionally, because we are so unconscious and we think about ourselves all the time instead of thinking of others. So, unintentionally, we actually cause them trouble. How do we cause others trouble? By our activities. Okay.
And people who are working under us, if they're doing something wrong and they have to be corrected, then it could be done with less scolding them, but we do more than so that is like that's what I
you struggle with that. That when somebody working under you doesn't do the correct thing, instead of just rectifying them, in a mild way, you go overboard and then give them more anxiety, more difficulty. Yes, that's
without
possible.
Words.
Without words, yes. The way we speak or we don't speak, we give trouble to others. Yes. Anything else somebody has? Sometimes we don't want to give trouble, but the person reacts in a different way. Beyond? Okay, I'm not hearing well. Anybody heard? Sometimes somebody is not a troublemaker, but others give him trouble. Is troubled by others. Yeah. But are we innocent? That is the question. That we can't do anything, that's understood. We can't do anything. Things come to us. According to what we are reading here, the devotee sees the mercy of Krishna in whatever happens to him. That's very difficult. But usually, we can learn from anything. And whatever happens to us, there is a lesson to learn. So this is what we have to do, because otherwise we will be upset all the time. Things keep happening to us. One day somebody slams the door in our face, next day somebody says something about us, the third day, you know, somebody forgets us. It happens all the time, so how much are we going to be disturbed? Yes, so you can take action if you want, but at the same time you should remain detached. Yeah, well, it means what action you will take, you know. You have to take help from somewhere, you have to, what kind of action. And the point is, what kind of action, you have to see what reactions are going to come from your action, because already what you are suffering, these are reactions from previous activities. So now, are you going to accept your reactions and try to just work on yourself, develop forgiveness, develop tolerance, fix yourself on Krishna, try to find a place, you know, where you can actually serve peacefully, or you are just going to bang your head against what's happening to you? And if you decide, you know, to actually do something about it, for sure, number one, you should be detached, and number two, what should be the goal? What should be the goal? If your goal is to just stop those people, set them right, then your goal is this. It's not the correct thing to do. The goal should always be to somehow be in a better position to serve. The goal should be to please the Lord. The goal should be to, you know, establish the truth, but not, the truth is not necessarily either I am right or he is wrong. It's not necessarily like that. So that's why these verses are a very big challenge for us, as you see. We are not at all at that stage where we can... A pure devotee has no problem whatsoever. Somebody just, you know, criticizing him, beats him, he's fine. Because he accepts, it's my previous karmas that are getting at me. And we don't accept that. Yes, so you can take shelter. The best thing is to take shelter. Take shelter of Krishna and take shelter of some devotees who are able to see better, to give us an advice, to see what's going on. We have to take shelter. Now, what? That's why we said what Prabhupada is describing here is difficult for us, because this is the position that we want to achieve. So we are not exactly there. And as we can see now, some of these things which are written here just don't make sense for us either. It's for the pure devotee, but it doesn't mean that it's not for us. We are practicing. Yes, good. So let's practice. Let's see whether the next verse will be more easy. Sorry? Interfering with others' independence? See, usually someone who gives us trouble, he is in trouble. That should be understood. One who gives us in trouble, he is in trouble. So one way is to think that, oh, he is getting too much in trouble, so I should protect him by somehow stopping, managing so that he stops giving me trouble. See, the purpose is to always be refined, because if you just want to get out of the trouble, that doesn't help at all. Because that's not what Krishna is trying to tell us. Yes?
We were discussing that how we get trouble to others. To the point, like, a lot of times devotees, they ignore their families if they're not devotees. That is a way of giving them trouble, to people. I also have a question regarding this, that, everywhere it is said, Prabhupada said that we should avoid the association of materialists. And sometimes the family might be falling in that category, the immediate family. Mm-hmm. So and then it becomes a challenge, that whether to avoid them totally, or then obviously we're troubling them if you're avoiding them totally.
Mm-hmm.
But going for a weekly visit to them and not taking their association, but trying to give them association might not happen, but at least not taking the association.
Yeah.
How should one balance in such a situation?
That is personal, but the main thing is that you should learn, to keep a good distance. You should learn to distinguish between what is the when you take and when you give. Try to give them association, and many times if it's the parents, they won't hear from their children. So just be a good child, bring them Mahaprasada, give them a big smile, a big hug. When they need help physically or whatever, you can extend some help to them. But the trouble comes when you start following their advice and you modify your practices to suit their desires. So that should not happen. But you have to balance it, because it depends. If you live right in their house, then you are tricked. It's very hard. That here in India there is that tradition of the traditional setup of joint families. So that becomes very complicated for a devotee. It's actually better to split, unless they really become devotees and all that. But if they don't change, you have to split. Otherwise, you live under their authority. If you are under their roof, you have to follow their rules. How will you practice? So it's either you become an extremely internal devotee. You remember? I told you the story of frying the pakoras.
Yes. Very interesting.
It's either you become a very internal devotee, and so on the surface you just do whatever they want, anytime they want, but inside you are remembering Krishna, chanting Krishna's name, you're doing everything. But you have to be strong to be like this. Most of us need the external part of Krishna consciousness. We can't just have the internal part. We don't have it. So you need the external part. So you have to keep your distance. But there shouldn't be any dvesha. There shouldn't be any hatred. There should not be any rejection of the family. You should not ignore them. you know, the feelings should be positive towards them. We should be grateful towards them. We should wish them well. We should try to help them. We should pray for them. So everything should be positive towards them. But we cannot let them encroach upon our devotional service with the understanding that the more we advance in devotion, the more they will benefit. That is the logic. The more we are devotees, the more we advance in Krishna consciousness, the more they will be benefited. And if we follow them and we don't advance in Krishna consciousness, then we lose and they lose. So if we want them to increase in devotional service, we should increase in devotional service. You know, usually the parents, their mind is fixed on their child. So if the child is thinking of Krishna, it's a good thing. But whether we think of Krishna or not, their mind is fixed on us. So if to listen to them, you have to give up thinking of Krishna. But this is for each and every person to balance very intelligently, you know, how much to give and take. It is by the grace of the Lord that he is so practiced that he is not disturbed by any outward disturbance. Actually, because a devotee is always engrossed in Krishna consciousness and engaged in devotional service, such material circumstances cannot move him. Generally, a materialistic person becomes very happy when there is something for his sense gratification and his body. But when he sees that others have something for their sense gratification and he hasn't, he is sorry and envious. When he is expecting some retaliation from an enemy, he is in a state of fear. And when he cannot successfully execute something, he becomes dejected. A devotee who is always transcendental to all these disturbances is very dear to Krishna. So this is rooted in remembrance. If we remember Krishna and are devoted to him, we will be able to get over all these things. Otherwise, there are always waves of emotion which are going up and down at every step. We become afraid, we become depressed, the next thing is we become happy, and then we become angry. So we have to work on these things. I remember in the beginning when I was in India, I was getting so angry with the rickshawalas. I used to be angry with myself that, you know, you go to a rickshaw and you want to go somewhere and it tells you 5 times the price. And then you get on the rickshaw and then it doesn't want to go in a way you want to go. He wants to get you down before, or he wants... And then after you have promised to pay him 5 times more, when you finally get down and you give him, still he wants more. And he's asking and insisting and this and that. And I used to get so angry. It took me several years in India to stop being angry with the rickshawala. Become detached and stop being angry with them. Especially in Vrindavan, I used to repent so much. Oh, he's a Brijbasi. What have I done? I blasted the Brijbasi. So I was thinking, oh no, I should not have done this. But it was uncontrollable. That we have to work on each and every little thing. So we get depressed by something. Somebody just tells you something, you know, and you're like, oh. And then for 3 days, the whole thing is going anti-clockwise. And you can't forget it. And you can't go over it. You can't get over it. You can't. So at some point in life, we have to realize that, do I want to remain in that condition? I don't want to remain in that condition. So what is the solution? Well, Kirtaniya Sadahari. Just chant. Learn to chant very nicely, you know, to overcome these waves of the mind, you know. When the mind is controlled during japa in the morning, then during the whole day, it will be easy to see it coming, you know. You see it coming, the pressure is coming up, let's not go in that direction. Take shelter of Krishna. As soon as the mind starts, you know, some anger is coming, some anything, kaam, krodh, lobh, mad, matsarya, moha, anything that comes up in the mind immediately, if we have chosen, that I don't want to, because we know the result. If I follow this, or very soon, either I'll be laughing or crying. And it's one after the next. First you laugh, and then you cry. Or vice versa. But one is always followed by the other. So if we don't want to go into this anymore, then the point is, as soon as we, by chanting japa attentively, we learn to be aware of the mind coming up this side, that side, then during the day, we will become aware, oh, now I'm getting angry. So immediately, Krishna, please protect me. Take shelter of Krishna, because we don't want to go in that direction. But first we have to take the decision that I don't want to go under these emotions, thoughts, images that are overwhelming my mind. Okay. 16. Anapeksha suchir daksha udasino gatavyata. Sarvarambha parityagi yomam bhakta same priyaha. My devotee who is not dependent on the ordinary course of activities, who is pure, expert, without cares, free from all pains, and not striving for some result, is very dear to me. So, not dependent on the ordinary course of activities. What does Prabhupada say that? This is anapeksha, actually. Anapeksha. What means anapeksha? Prabhupada says neutral, not dependent on the ordinary course of activities. What does that mean?
Not expect anything.
Indifferent? Is that what you said? In one sense, yes. Don't want anything from anyone. Don't expect anything from anyone. If it comes, very nice. Doesn't come, very nice. And not bothered, like doesn't depend on external things. Srila Prabhupada gives an example. When I went to America, that was today, no? When I went to America, I went with 40 rupees. Sumati Moraji gave me a ticket, and I had only 40 rupees. That 40 rupees could not be spent there. Then, when I was disembarking, that was today, I told the captain, Captain Pandya, I have not a single dollar with me. Imagine Prabhupada arrives in America. I have not a single dollar with me. So meaning that, you know, some other person would have thought, you know, that I go to America, I've got to have money, I've got to have this, I've got to have that. That's what we do when we go somewhere. You know, we prepare, we phone them before, I'm coming, send a taxi, this, that, red carpet.
So Srila Prabhupada was very neutral. Like he just went there, it was the order of his guru, he just went there, didn't depend on the external things, didn't even take money. Imagine, you cross the ocean, you go so far away, and you go without any money. What do you expect over there? And you're going to land there, you know. So Prabhupada, so he was just, oh, okay, now time to come down. So what to do next? Oh, I have no money. All right. Captain Panya, I have not a single dollar with me. Will you purchase one set of my books? That's the only thing he had with him. He had the trunks with the books. So the captain said, Swami, what is your price? And Prabhupada said, $16. He paid me 20, Prabhupada said. So then he came down with $20. So this is anapeksha. Like when Prabhupada, many times we hear from his disciples that Prabhupada said, oh, say, go to that country, open the temple there. Narayani Mataji, she always tells this, that they had been in the temple for 2 months in New York. So after 2 months, the temple president told her and her husband that now you have been here for 2 months already. Get out. Go open a temple in somewhere in southern America. And she said, so we didn't ask, do you know anybody there? Where is the ticket? Are you giving us any money? We didn't ask that, she said. Because at that time, it was understood that, first of all, there was nothing. And it was not the question to ask. The culture was full surrender. So, she said, we packed our few little clothes in some cardboard box and put the strings around it. And the devotees gave us a lift to the highway. And then they stood on the highway and they waved at the cars. And in this way, they got all the way down to South USA. And then they arrived somewhere and they had no money, no place to stay, nobody they knew. And they started a temple. And they stayed there. And then after some time, I don't remember how much time, they received a letter from Prabhupada saying that I need some devotees in India to start the preaching in India. So, please come. Okay, closed the temple, finished everything. Somehow or other got on a flight. Came to India. And Mataji always said that Prabhupada said, come. He never said, go back. So we bought a one-way ticket. And then we never left. Because Prabhupada said, come. He didn't say, go back. And same, arriving in India, there was nothing. There was no this, no that, no this, no that. They used to stay in Juhu, on Juhu land with the rats. So this is something which is called anapeksha. You don't expect anything. You don't depend on any externals. You're happy if it's there, happy if it's not there. So naturally this requires a little absorption in the goal of life and in pleasing Krishna. But such person is very dear to the Lord. The devotee is clean, that we know, inside. By chanting Hare Krishna and engaging in devotional service, and outside by following the Pancharatriki Vidhi. He is expert. Why is he expert? Because he knows the essence. So one who knows the essence, he can always adjust everything. There is also Sarvaramba Parityagi, very important, which means that the devotee does not endeavor for anything, especially for his own, for any achievement of his own. Understanding that it's a material endeavor. Okay, next. Yo na hrishyati na drishti na shochati na kamchati shubha shubha parityagi bhakti manya same priyaha. One who neither rejoices nor grieves, who neither laments nor desires, and who renounces both auspicious and inauspicious things, such a devotee is very dear to me. A pure devotee is neither happy nor distressed over material gain and loss, nor is he very much anxious to get a son or disciple, nor is he distressed by not getting them. If he loses anything which is very dear to him, he does not lament. Similarly, if he does not get what he desires, he is not distressed. Looks like us, right? Usually, we are so much entangled, always getting what I want. The main thing we hear in our mind is, I want, I want, I want. And sometimes we hear, I don't want. This is the main thing that goes on in our mind. I want, sometimes I don't want. But this is not, this is, Prabhupada actually, there is a conversation where he says, as soon as you hear I want, you should know you're in Maya. This is Maya, he said. When there is I want, any question of I want, that is mine. Our desires should match the desires of the spiritual master. They should match Krishna's desires. Yes, we want. But if we want for ourselves, then it becomes something not very conducive. The devotee is prepared. There's one thing here. The devotee is transcendental in the face of all kinds of auspicious, inauspicious, and sinful activities. So sometimes, for the sake of spreading Krishna consciousness, we come in touch to so many things, sometimes auspicious, sometimes inauspicious. But the devotee does not see anything inauspicious or auspicious, because there is only one auspiciousness in this world, that is Krishna consciousness. And Srila Prabhupada landed in Boston and he looked outside of the Jaladuta. He wrote a poem, you know, and he said, what kind of people are these? What kind of place is that? Because you must see that India at that time was so different. Very, very different. There were no cars, you know, in 65. There were no cars in India. When he arrived in Boston, there were traffic jams. And there were no tall buildings at all. In Boston, the buildings are so tall that sometimes you don't see the top. They are in the clouds. So when Prabhupada saw this, and in India, at that time, people would move by walk. They would move by cycle. They would walk peacefully. And over there, everybody was running. And Prabhupada understood immediately what they are running after. They are not running after Krishna. He saw. They are so covered with passion, with ignorance. When he was staying at Sally's place, he opened the fridge one day to put his vegetables, and what he saw?
Meat.
The box open with the meat for the cat. Boo. We think, boo, boo. Because since long time we've given up meat eating or never started it. We cannot imagine So what did Prabhupada say? Ashuddha. Very auspicious, inauspicious. Oh, no, Prabhupada didn't do like this. He put his vegetables a little away from the box of meat and kept them there. And when Sally's baby came with a little napkins on, you know, little baby, and it was coming, so Prabhupada took the baby and sat him on his lap. He was dressed, and he never changed his dress. He was dressed with his very simple lungi, and he had the baby on the side. Imagine he was babysitting there in the house. Did he see anything auspicious, inauspicious? No. Prabhupada's mind was fixed that he had come to spread Krishna consciousness in America. And that's the only thing he was praying and hoping. It is said that every 2 months, in the beginning, he used to go and inquire about the boats. When is the next boat going? Because nothing was happening. Everything seemed inauspicious, Prabhupada said. Everything seemed inauspicious. But his vision was beyond the inauspicious. So that is the devotee. Doesn't see. And the sinful activities, Prabhupada saw, this is the land of sinful activity. But he remained equipoised. He never, you know, changed his principles. He never became upset with the people. The people who came to him, they were all sinful. All means the greater percentage. They were all sinful. People that a person like him in India, if he had been a smarta, he would not at all have spoken to such person. What to speak of developing a regular relationship with them, working for them, feeding them, would not have done that. He lived with a drug addict who almost killed him one day. But Prabhupada was transcendental, so he could take all this. Yes? He is prepared to accept all kinds of risks for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. Nothing is an impediment in the discharge of his devotional service. So we saw that Prabhupada almost died on the Jaladuta. He was an old man. Sumati Morarji, she told me, Swamiji, you cannot go. You are an old man. She didn't want to give the ticket, not because she was greedy, but because she felt that, well, this old man is going to die on the boat. So Prabhupada risked his own life at such an old age. So that is the devotee. And many of Prabhupada's disciples, as devotees, they also did that. Those who preached in Russia, they risked their lives. They went to jail, they got beaten. Many got very hurt, but they did it. Those who preach in China, it's a risk, even today, it is a risk. So, such a devotee is very dear to Krishna. Samashatro cha mitre cha tatha mana apamanayoho shitoshna sukadukesho samasanga vivarjitaha tulyaninda stutir mauni santushto yena kena chet aniketa stiramatir bhaktiman me priyo naraha. One who is equal to friends and enemies, who is equipoised in honor and dishonor, heat and cold, not like us, happiness and distress, fame and infamy, ooh, that's a difficult one, who is always free from contaminating association, always silent and satisfied with anything, who doesn't care for any residence, who is fixed in knowledge, and who is engaged in devotional service, such a person is very dear to me. Srila Prabhupada comments, We may find some repetition in the descriptions of the qualifications of a devotee, but this is just to emphasize the fact that a devotee must acquire all these qualifications. Without good qualifications, we cannot be a pure devotee. So these qualities we hear, they have to develop, and this is not, Prabhupada said, one does not have to extraneously endeavor to acquire these qualifications. Engagement in Krishna consciousness and devotional service automatically helps develop those qualities. This is called, in the terms of Srila Rupa Goswami, Shubhada. The devotional service is the giver of all auspiciousness. And one of the meanings of this is that it bestows all good qualities. Sorry? Shubhada. Shubhada. It gives, shubh is auspiciousness. So bhakti gives all auspiciousness. Srila Prabhupada commented on one of these things here, Aniketa. Aniketa means he's not concerned for any residence, doesn't care for any residence. This is very difficult. Most of the people in the world, they are very much, their residence, that's, you know, home, sweet home. Residence. So it's very important to most people. So that is one of, it's very glorious when one can leave one's residence. It's considered something very glorious. Because residence, what does it mean, residence?
Mind.
Huh?
Mind. It's
a
body concept.
Yes, you're saying it's mind. It's
a
body concept.
Yeah. What do we get in the residence? Shelter and sense of security, even though it's not secure at all. You know, the thieves can come at any time, the gas can blow up at any time, anything can happen. But at home we feel secure. So there's a sense of security. What else is in the house? There is possessions, yes. There is comfort, there is emotional support, there's some support by the family members. We arrange everything the way we want, so we can just extend our arm this way, we get this, we extend our arm that way, we get that. You know, we recline this way, everything is okay, we have something for the foot as well. This is home. It's very comfortable. It's that all adjusted for me. So Prabhupada explains, there was no place to live, no money. Sannyas means aniketa. Now we have 100 temples, but Krishna does not allow me to stay more than 8 days in each place. I'm dependent on Krishna. If he allows, Hare Krishna. Sometimes I think, when I was simply depending on Krishna, those days, I had no place to live, no money. It was nice. Now I have to depend on so many disciples. They are good disciples. They are bringing everything. I'm simply ordering. Still, I think, that was better before. That is, in Aniketa, it's not just the fact of not having a place, but it's the fact of not needing a place. Not having that consciousness of one's own place or sense of insecurity. It is not there. A devotee is happy in all conditions. This is is satisfied, I suppose. Sometimes he may get very palatable foodstuffs, sometimes not, but he's satisfied. So this is a sign of our, because eating is one of the basic needs. So are we satisfied? Nor does he care for any residential facility. He may sometimes live underneath a tree, and he may sometimes live in a very palatial building. He is attracted to neither. So this is what we saw with Prabhupada. He was not attracted. He got 108 temples, and he thought, oh, it was better before, when I did not have a residence. Sorry? No, even before that. I mean, yeah, at that time, when he was in Vrindavan, he didn't really have his own place. Yes? And that before also, when he was going to Delhi, you know, he was struggling like anything, but he depended on Krishna. And when he came in America in the very beginning, he didn't have a place. It took some time. After he was chased by that person, the drug addict, after he was chased away, then finally some people got together, a few of them, and they paid the rent. Then he could stay somewhere. Otherwise he didn't have a place at all. So, Krishna concludes here. This is the last verse. Yetu dharma amritamidam yathoktam pariupasate shraddhadhana matparama bhaktaste tivame priyaha. So, those who follow this imperishable path of devotional service and who completely engage themselves with faith, making me the supreme goal, are very, very dear to me. Ativa, ati, priya, they are very, very dear to me. So what is this imperishable path of devotional service? It says here it is the nectar of religion, the essence. This is the essence of religion. Dharma amritam. The essence of religion, which is followed by the faithful. We heard that before. That Shraddhadana Purusha. Here it says Shraddhadana. So they are faithful and they have me as the goal. In this chapter, from verse 2 through the end, from Maya Vesya Mano Yemam, fixing the mind on me, through Yetu Dharmamritamidam, this religion of eternal engagement, the Supreme Lord has explained the process of transcendental service for approaching Him. The question... Such processes are very dear to the Lord, and He accepts a person engaged in them. The question of who is better, one who is engaged in the path of impersonal Brahman, or one who is engaged in the personal service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was raised by Arjuna, and the Lord replied to him so explicitly that there is no doubt that devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the best of all processes of spiritual realization. So, throughout the section, first the way that Krishna answered very clearly that bhakti is the best path, and then how he explained how the path of impersonal practices is completely full of trouble. And then in 8 to 12, what he did, he also showed that the top is to be fully engaged in thinking of him, the next best in sadhana, next best is work for him. And then if you can't do that, then there is a progressive path. So he showed everywhere that bhakti is what he wants us to do. And then in this last section, where he explains that the bhakta is so dear to him, so dear to him. He keeps repeating the same thing. So, therefore, this chapter is definitely giving us the direction that bhakti is the ultimate path. Srila Prabhupada says, as long as one does not have the chance to associate with a pure devotee, the impersonal conception may be beneficial. In the impersonal conception of the Absolute Truth, one works without fruitive results, meditates and cultivates knowledge to understand spirit and matter. This is necessary as long as one is not in the association of a pure devotee. Fortunately, if one develops directly a desire to engage in Krishna consciousness in pure devotional service, he does not need to undergo step-by-step improvements in spiritual realization. Devotional service, as described in the middle six chapters of Bhagavad Gita, is more congenial. One need not bother about materials to keep body and soul together, because by the grace of the Lord, everything is carried out automatically. So this is Prabhupada's invitation to us. Just serve Krishna. Give your time, your life, your energy to serve Him. And in this service, everything is included. You also get fed, you get housed, you get everything. But it's all connected with Krishna. So there is no material side to life anymore. So this is the beauty of Bhakti Yoga. In the other yogas, it's not like this. Yes, Akinchana Prabhu?
Is there a necessary path that someone has to develop this quality to become devotee?
And after becoming, the two are working together. We said Shubhada, Kleshagni Shubhada, you know, devotional service first destroys the anarthas, the unwanted qualities, the unwanted desires. And at the same time, it actually, these qualities are the qualities of the soul. You know, when one is a pure soul, devoid of tamas, rajas, then these qualities emerge. So it's natural. You don't need those qualities to become a devotee, but if you become a devotee, these qualities are going to evolve. And the more these qualities grow, the more we attract Krishna and we get His reciprocation. So this also shows how Krishna consciousness is an internal development. It's not just being busy all the time. Like if we are busy doing so many things and at the same time we constantly bother other people, or so that's not going to work with Krishna. So we have to change. Krishna consciousness is about a transformation of the heart. These good qualities have to manifest. If they don't manifest, it means maybe we are on this level of matkarma krin. We are working for Krishna. We're working. But what about the inside? It has to change. There has to be a change inside. Otherwise, we are not progressing in Krishna consciousness. The result of working for Krishna is that there is a transformation in the heart. Yeah. Impersonal. Can? Yes? Can? Yes. 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 Yeah. Bhakti implies the association of the devotees. I don't remember when is the last time that we saw that. We had talked about this. Maybe it was in 1155 where we talked of this. I don't remember when was the last time we heard about this, that bhakti implies the association of devotees. And when we talk of sadhana bhakti, that means in the association of devotees, always. It's not alone. It's not a lonely process. As opposed to Ashtanga Yoga, you remember? Ashtanga Yoga means alone, isolation, remote residence and everything.
But bhakti means association of devotees. Sankirtan, to get together to speak about Krishna. And these transformations, you can understand from the qualities also. He doesn't disturb anybody. He's not envious. Meaning he is living among the people. That's the devotee. Okay, so tomorrow we begin chapter 13. So be ready. Kshetra, Kshetragya. Very nice. Not this body again.